Welcome to the Wellness Within podcast. We are a nonprofit wellness center for patients, survivors, caregivers, and families affected by the trauma of cancer. We provide a wide range of services that enhance an individual's ability to experience quality of life. And we believe that everyone should have access to our programs and conversations, which are offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied the support they need. If you find inspiration in what we share, we invite you to consider supporting Wellness Within through a donation. Your generosity enables us to continue offering these valuable resources to our community. To make a donation and contribute to the well-being of those facing cancer, please visit our website at wellnesswithin.org or click the link in the episode description. Your support makes a difference, so thank you for being a vital part of our mission. Together, we empower whole person well-being, bridging gaps, and reconnecting to what is most meaningful.
Because we don't usually talk to people about their sex and their sexuality during cancer, like, because typically survivorship has traditionally focused on like post-treatment.
Yes.
And we're not really starting a discussion until like after treatment. I feel like that reinforces a message that it's not appropriate to think about it during treatment.
Welcome to Wellness Within. We would like to thank Kaiser Permanente, Elizabeth A. Harmon General Dentistry, and Columbia Bank, who in part sponsor this podcast. Join us for relaxing meditations and enlivening conversations about topics that support wellness in the presence of cancer. To access our class schedule, to make a donation, or to sign up for our newsletter, please visit wellnesswithin.org.
Hello, and welcome to Wellness Within Cancer Support Services podcast. I am Elizabeth Klein, Executive Director of Wellness Within Cancer Support Services, and I'm joined here today with Dr. Sam Siegel, and we're having the important conversation on cancer and sexuality. So welcome, Dr. Sam.
Thank you.
Before we start, we'd like to make some brief introductions. I am going to briefly let you know who I am and why I'm the Executive Director of Wellness Within Cancer Support Services. And then I would like Dr. Sam, because honestly, Dr. Sam, I don't think I could do justice to introducing you. So I definitely want you to tell our listeners about who you are and your story. But first, just so people have a context so they know who we are and why we're talking about this very important conversation or this topic. A little bit about myself is that I am a two-time cancer survivor. I found Wellness Within and its programming when my youngest son ended up having just lots of struggles. And I honestly didn't think that I needed anything. I could just power through cancer myself and it was all good. But what I was really doing was just barely hanging on by a thread. And I just needed some support, emotional, mental support. And what I discovered was in my effort to just try to keep it together, I really was not living my life the way I wanted to live. And going through the programming, I ended up discovering the way I wanted to live my life as a more whole person and with more joy. So I am now the executive director, and that's why I'm here today. And I'm so excited to talk about this topic.
Me too.
Right? Yeah. Because we so need to talk about it. And it's one that I do hear a lot that needs to be talked about. But we're holding everybody in suspense here. Dr. Sam, please tell us about yourself a little bit.
Thank you so much for having me. And so many things that you just said really resonate with me. I'm going to try and stay on point, but I just want to start off by expressing my gratitude for allowing me in this space. And I had a similar experience finding Wellness Within. I was just really struggling to put myself together again. I say that specifically as opposed to put myself back together, just together in a new way and whatever that meant. And then I found you guys. I found you. I found Stevie. And when I first showed up here and we had our first conversation, I wasn't sure if I was showing up as a doctor self, as a patient self, all of them. And our conversations really helped me to integrate all of those selves and to develop some of my ideas a little bit further about
how I want to use my personal experience to help the cancer community. And I just also want to start off with the disclaimer for everybody listening that I know that I am one voice in this community, and everybody has their own voice and their own experience in cancer, and especially when it comes to sex and cancer. It's a really big topic and encompassing a lot of things, a lot of different areas. And so I just want you to know that I'm here to share my story and my experience and some of the wisdom that I've learned in this process. And I don't want to speak for anybody. I know there's a lot of different sub-issues within this topic, and we may not get to all of them today, but I hope this is just the beginning of a really great conversation and kind of an opening for people to begin thinking about sex and cancer a little bit differently.
You know, just hearing you say that, just that acknowledgement to me just brought up so much, because in a way, that's just the crux of the whole thing. We as human beings, we're all so individual. We're all so unique. Cancer happens to us, but there's nobody in the universe who can do us exactly how we are. There's no Dr. Sam, another Dr. Sam. No one can do Dr. Sam like Dr. Sam can do in the entire cosmos. And when you think about that, it's astounding. There's nobody who can be me like me. And yet cancer comes in sometimes and causes upheaval and chaos and hijacks our lives. And we're like, blah. And sex and our sexuality and our identity around that and our body image, that's all comes into play of who we uniquely are. And so you're completely correct. We're here to have a conversation because it's an important concept, but every single person of who they are, it is unique to them. So I do think that this is, at first I was going to say it's an elephant in the room, but I actually think it's like this monster onion in the room, right? Because it's like there's so many layers to it. We are such unique individuals. And so we will talk about this in this conversation, and we'll share some of our own personal experience and stories. But again, that's being, you know, the one and only very unique Dr. Sam and the one and only very unique Elizabeth Klein. Yep. But we really, I think as we have this conversation, I would hope that our listeners would maybe contemplate what makes them so unique and what makes them resonate and be define and give joy and bring in everything that makes them who they are around their own sexuality.
Totally. Because I think that part of the initial and ongoing injury to the act of sex and the sex life and the sexual self during cancer has to do with losing oneself. And so part of regaining that, reclaiming our power, is really tapping into that sense of self. Like, that's part of it. So yeah, I'm glad we started off this way.
I am too. And I do agree. I think that's such a big part. That's where that transition into empowerment, I think, and that's a difficult one to make, especially at the very beginning. When you're broadsided by cancer, mm-hmm. and the uncertainty, and when there's not a lot of information and it's so new and you're like, wait a minute, why did this happen to me? And I think that as more information comes in, and you might feel like things, as things evolve and you can start taking stock and start recognizing what you do have choice over and what you can't choose, but what you choose to respond to and how you choose to respond to, you start making that shift to the empowerment. And I do think that shifts us back into this conversation about sex and our sexuality and how we identify with our body images and everything around that. So back to my image of a big onion, though. Because there are lots of layers, don't you think?
Sure.
I mean, absolutely. A lot goes into it, especially at the type of cancer diagnosis, right?
Absolutely. I guess this is a good spot to just give a brief intro about myself and my story, because there's so many layers even before my cancer.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, let's dive into those layers.
So I'm a internal medicine primary care doctor, and I'm a mom, 3 kids. I'm a wife to an amazing guy named Sam.
So Dr. Sam and Dr. Sam.
Dr. Sam. Sam squared.
Got it.
There have been multiple iterations of the Sams. Actually, my massage therapist the other day called us a sandwich.
That's awesome. I love
that. And I actually hadn't heard that one yet. So I was very excited about that. Oh, nice. But yeah, all these different things. And I'd already been through a lot with my husband as his caregiver, even before I became sick with cancer. My husband, also a doc, and had inflammatory bowel disease and had autoimmune liver disease, had a liver transplant. He had testicular cancer during medical school.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we have been sort of on the journey of reinventing our sex life and our intimacy with one another for years. We've had to do that through multiple hospitalizations, through him having to get an orchiectomy or testicle removal for his testicular cancer, losing his hair, getting his liver transplant, ultimately getting an ileostomy bag. Mm-hmm. And how do you reinvent your sex life when there is an ileostomy bag now in the bedroom? Mm-hmm. How do I support him to feel sexy, to help me have sex with him? So there's been so many different things that we've had to go through, and that was all before I even got sick. So in 2021, I got a cough and I was fatigued, and then I got a lump above my collarbone and was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it didn't take long on my multi-drug regimen to become quite ill from the therapy that was helping to save my life. Lost all my hair, gained a ton of weight from steroids, and I just felt like a shell of myself. When I looked in the mirror, my outsides didn't match my insides. Mm. And I couldn't think properly, and so much of my identity has been wrapped up in being a doctor. So I lost that part of my identity because I could barely string five words together at certain points in my cancer. I had really bad chemo-related cognitive impairment, like the most severe form of chemo brain, where disorientation, shopping a small grocery list. I even stopped driving at one point because I didn't feel confident that I should be behind the wheel, feeling how my brain was feeling. Wow. So got through the 6 months of therapy, and within a month of having a scan that showed no evidence of disease, got diagnosed with a relapse. It took a little while. I had to get a number of biopsies and ultimately a thoracic surgery to sample a lymph node right near my heart in order to confirm the relapse. Then I started the road to bone marrow transplant, had a bone marrow transplant, and then just actually 2 months ago finished a year-long of consolidation treatment after my transplant. So I'm still relatively fresh, and I've loved doing various interviews and projects throughout this experience, because in each one, I can hear that I'm in different stages of healing. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a much different place now than some interviews that I did last fall when I was just a few months out from transplant. So it's been interesting to see how this has all evolved. And right now I'm in the process of trying to make meaning from this experience, not just personally, but professionally. I'm trying to build a cancer survivorship program at my organization where I do medicine. And I'm hoping that it will be different than a lot of the current approaches to cancer survivorship, things that I have learned personally that my fellow cancer survivors, thrivers, however people refer to themselves, all the things that I've heard them talk about and teach me and show me. And I want to bring that to the table. I want to help people realize their vitality during cancer instead of just the sole focus on mortality. I feel like there's so much focus on just not dying, mm-hmm. that we need more focus on living during cancer, after cancer, for those of us who will go into long-term remission. That won't be for everybody. Some people will be long-term stable disease on chronic palliative treatment indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So I want to create a survivorship concept that is for all of those people. It's not just for people who have finished treatment. It's for everybody, because life is happening now. It doesn't just start when cancer's over, treatment's over. And a big part of that is sex. So I realize that was kind of like a roundabout way, but yeah. One of my best friends that I met post-transplant in my blood cancer support group, Tati, she just passed away a few months ago. She passed away in May, and one of her biggest dreams was helping to elevate this conversation about sex and cancer, because she told me that couple times when she had been in the hospital and people were asking about her hormones and needing to stop her hormones to do various procedures. And she expressed like concern about that because she knew that she needed them to help her intimacy in the bedroom. She said that there were a few instances where the look that washed over people's faces, that they clearly couldn't process her wanting to be a sexual being at the same time that she was dealing with terminal cancer, was so additionally painful on top of already dealing with her cancer. And she was just like, man, Sam, we need to do something about this. Like, we need to talk about the act of sex, like not all in the doctory way of like intimacy after cancer. Like, let's talk about sex, like the act of sex. Is it painful? Are you dry? Like, you know,
absolutely.
She wanted to get that conversation out in the open. And she showed me, she kind of opened my eyes to that. And then I started looking for that. Like, I started participating in survivorship discussions at my work with some people that are already doing this medicine, like doing really good-hearted medicine. But a lot of the conversation was focused on like after. We don't address that until after. And then I started being like, well, why? Why are we waiting until after treatment? Like, life is now. Sex happens now in cancer,
exactly.
After cancer. And so part of me being here today is I'm hoping to carry out Tati's wish of talking about sex, taking the shame away from it, taking the fear away from it, and helping patients to feel more empowered to talk about sex with their doctors during cancer, vitality, like whatever that means to them.
Well, in honor of Tati, I am so happy that we are having this conversation. And again, that's what this is about. Yeah, cancer happens to us. It is not us.
Yeah.
And again, there's so much that we can't control with cancer, you know, that when a treatment has to happen, okay, we have to get up, our life works around it, or what it does to us, you know, physically, it's like, oh, okay. But we do have some things we can control, you know, and we are vibrant human beings. It cannot steal our soul, you know, and so let's talk. Let's talk to you. Dr. Sam.
Let's talk about sex.
Baby.
So I feel like one of the important things to just call it out right out in the open is the notion that there's a lot of different issues pertaining to sex and sexuality, and sometimes they are sort of what I feel inappropriately equated. Sex, the act of sex, and fertility and reproduction all sort of under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
And I think about it like a Venn diagram, like there's some overlap. But not like, no, not it's for everybody.
Sterile and medicinal often.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that, yeah, let's talk about the human enjoyment. And
yeah. And so for some people that will be related. Like some
absolutely.
People, their sense of fertility or maybe changes in their fertility and will impact their feeling of sexuality. But for other people, it won't. Like, I had a great conversation with this young woman who went through leukemia and bone marrow transplant, and she talked about sort of feeling repeatedly microaggressed by her healthcare team because they sort of delayed some care that she had to have and forced her to have a reproductive consult, even though she's one of these people. She was always adamant that she never wanted children. This wasn't like a thing that suddenly she was feeling different because she got diagnosed with cancer. Like, she always knew that she didn't want to have children and was very clear about that from the beginning. Like, no, I don't really need a discussion about that. No, I don't need that consult. And it was really sort of forced upon her, and that impacted her. Like, she, you know, her sexual identity, her sense of self, and her treatment and her vitality does not relate to her fertility because she doesn't want to be a mom. And she doesn't want to have a pregnancy. And so I just wanted to give a shout out to that experience. There's going to be the transgender experience in sex and cancer. So there's a lot of different overlap. Like, sex is a really complex culmination of neurological factors. Like, the nerves in your spinal cord have to be working properly, and in your genital area, your hormones have to be working properly. It's a psychological event. It's a vascular event. So if there's vascular issues. So there's so many different factors, like, biologically that have to be operating on all cylinders in order for the act of sex to happen successfully, that any problem in any one of those areas could cause a sex problem.
And that's what cancer potentially, and again, it depends on the person. And so again, back to our disclaimer at the beginning, this is so very, very individualized. Mm-hmm. But in general, that's what cancer, the issue of cancer, I mean, you know, the treatment regime, you know, how much fear, anxiety, I mean, fear of recurrence could be one of those emotional challenges that can impact sex, you know, and how you're feeling about sex. I mean, if you're concerned about, you know, cancer coming back, it could have an impact. A hormone therapy that you're having, yeah, how you feel about your body, you know, at different surgeries, all could play into how you are feeling about sex, you know, how you felt about sex before cancer had and the person that you now are identifying as you are after or during treatment. That change and adjusting to that change all has an impact.
I love that you brought that up because it reminded me of this really funny essay that I wrote called The Nanny. And
I can't wait to hear about this.
The Nanny essay was about this afternoon romp that my husband and I had like just a few months ago. We managed to get all three of our kids distracted, like on various things. Like, yes, we did use the electronic babysitters. iPads were out. Like,
yeah.
You know, whatever.
You got to do. Yeah.
Distracted. And we managed to grab 10 minutes together in our laundry room and to connect sexually. And it was so funny. We turned the light off and we're trying to be quiet. And the dryer is going. So there's like the light from the dryer. And I'm starting to feel like, oh, are we in Amsterdam? Like, it's got this whole vibe to the room. Like, it's hot and there's, you know, the dryer's going, the sound and the light. And I get this flash in my mind. Like, I started having this fantasy going. And I'm not usually, like, a big-time fantasizer, but I start having this fantasy going in my mind during sex that my husband, Sam, he's got his backwards hat on. He's totally looking like a college bro that day, which is totally doing it for me. And I started having this fantasy that he is having sex with the nanny, but the nanny is me. Okay. It's Nanny Samantha. Mm-hmm. And he's having sex with Nanny Samantha, which is still me, while professional Samantha is on her way home in the car or whatever. And so we're sort of like rushing. It's very exciting. So he's not cheating on me because he's having sex with nanny me while the real me is waiting to come home. And my brain like did that. I mean, I didn't purposefully do that. My brain just sort of created this whole story. And then later that evening, like as after we were sort of done and we're cooking dinner together, listening to Bob Marley and like food prepping in the kitchen, I tell him, I said, no, I had this funky little fantasy going on earlier when we were having sex that like I was a nanny version of myself, like this really sexy nanny version. So you weren't cheating on me. And I wasn't cheating on you because it was still us. It was just like different versions of myself. And I said, I don't know why I did that. And I was really pondering that. And he goes, you're nuts. I love you.
Yeah.
But what I ended up realizing and then writing about in this essay was that my brain did that because I needed to imagine a version of myself that was sexy, that was, you know, sort of not feeling like this experiment with medical science that had been poked and prodded and this body that has been so traumatized by everything that I've gone through and my port scar and my hair and all the things that have happened to this body that I now have body memory about. Mm-hmm. I needed to imagine a version of myself that day that was like free and unencumbered by all of that. And that's why I did that. And so it was like this funny thing, but it was also really this deep thing where I sort of, then I thought, well, maybe that, you know, the nanny's in me always. Like that is me. I'm still in there. I'm still a sexual being. But yeah, I just thought it was really
funny that day.
In preparing for this podcast, you know, I was reading up on, you know, what are ways people should cope, you know, and you know, while during treatment or after treatment and adjusting and cultivating their sex life. And that was exactly one of the suggestions. And I think it can be a difficult one, you know, because that you had mentioned earlier, the idea of shame. It's like, oh, you know, fantasies in this culture, should I be fantasizing?
Yeah.
And that, but if that's what makes you feel vibrant and whole and joy us back to the comment that you were mentioning about we're living right now.
Yep.
And oh my gosh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
You had a great, you know, intimacy with your husband.
Yep.
And if that's what works, and that's the reason why we're having this podcast today, it's to say, this is about living life right now. And if that's what needs to work for you,
yeah, that's what works.
Yeah.
My husband and I, you know, I had to have surgery on my breast. And it's, you know, I was never one. I was an athlete. I've always been an athlete and competitive soccer, riding horses fairly competitively. So, you know, big horses, sitting trot. So my breasts have never been a thing that I sexually identified for. They were always like the best sports bras ever. So, you know, so things don't bounce around,
yeah,
you know. But I discovered that my husband, though, enjoyed my breasts. You know, it's just men do that. So
natural.
It's natural, right? To me, they were more functional, but it was for him. But after I had a lumpectomy and then some radiation and all that. And but they scarred and they looked quite, the left breast looks quite deformed. And so my thing is I looked at it and started calling it Frankenboob.
I love it.
And then that's what it was to me. I was like, oh,
there's Frankenboob.
And I realized, though, it did upset me. And I laugh because humor is a coping mechanism. I mean, it just is.
Sure.
Do we do that? But it was a bit devastating to me. You know, it's part of your body. It's cut away and it gets deformed through this process. And I did finally sit down and I went through grief with it a little bit. The laughter, I think, gets me past that. The Frankenboob gets me a little bit past that, but truly it did affect me. He was a great sport and communicating with him about it. I have more pain in that breast and communicating with him about that. But what's interesting now is that now that he is aware of this and having that thorough, you know, big conversation with him, even though, like I said, it's not been something that I identify with, you know, too much, but for him it was. She's so nurturing.
So how's Frankenboob?
So
that's so sweet.
It is. And it's almost like you go through this long cycle. And it is almost a grief cycle to be for me it was anyways.
Yeah.
You know, a loss, or at least, you know, a little bit of tissue or its form or what it was once was. And again, it's not something I was perseverating on, but I had to sit and acknowledge it was there for me. We went through a coping thing and now it becomes something that actually connects us and communicating that with him. So,
Communicating that is, I can resonate with that. For me, it's been similar, like sort of the sexual healing, the new kind of realization of a sexual self during and post cancer has been a total grief process. Just like you said, I can recall this one time. This is when I really started healing, was when I realized I was at rock bottom sexually. Like I went over to my friend Tati's house and I was like, Tati, I have zero sexual thoughts anymore. And that is terrifying to me. Like I used to have, you know, I'd have a flitting thought across my brain about like
my husband
and let the last escapade that we had or whatever, and thinking about him and feeling like my heart quickening a little bit or butterfly, whatever I would feel. And I realized it had been months since I had any sexual thought. And I said, I feel the same way about sex as I feel about my kitchen table.
Whoa.
Like, I feel nothing.
Yeah.
I'm dead inside. Like, it was just this really upsetting thing. And I said, and I don't know. Like, I think my vagina is broken, because even though I had felt that way, I still had tried periodically to have sex with him because I wanted to have that for myself. I wanted to please him, but it was like uncomfortable, like vaginally. It was like pinchy. And I was just sort of pushing through. And whenever I was telling him, he was always super respectful and accommodating and all of that. And so when I brought it up to her, she was like, girl, do you have any of these? And went to her closet and brought out this box of all of these different things. Lube and dildos and vibrators, like all these things. And I was like, no, I don't have any of those things. And I said, but not because I have any barriers to them emotionally, whatever. I just, we hadn't needed them before. So she said to her boyfriend, and she's like, okay, fire up the car. We're going to the sex shop.
And so that night, this was like a month before she died, we both had put our respirators on, our post-BMT respirators. Boyfriend drove us to the sex shop. And fortunately, there wasn't anyone else there. So we had like this private session almost. And we talked to the woman at the sex shop. And we looked at all these products together. And Tati was like, you need this and you need that and you need this. And I was like, oh, okay. And I spent all this money. And we told the clerk at the sex shop like our whole life story. We're like, we're cancer patients and going through chemo. And we laughed and we cried. She was so touched that we were like sharing openly about our bodies. And so I got all these things, and including like lube and this little BB vibrator thing. And then I was really proud of myself because I got something called a fleshlight for my husband, which is like this little contract. It's like a pocket vagina. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking I'm so cool because I have purchased this like spare vagina for my husband to help get him off when I'm feeling broken.
Yeah.
So I'm coming home from this like escapade with Tati thinking like, I am such a badass.
Yeah.
I got all this stuff for us. And then even if that doesn't work, I have a backup option for Sam so that he can still,
his needs are taken care of.
And when I showed that to him, he didn't cry, but he looked like he was about to cry. He was very upset. Like, oh my God, I'm going to cry just talking about it. Just that we would need that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking like I was doing something awesome because I thought like maybe I'm just broken. Mm-hmm. And our sex is, I'm so emotional inside.
I don't know. Yeah.
And like our sex is just broken, but I still wanted him to be happy.
Yeah.
And that was not acceptable to him.
Yeah.
He refused to believe that our sex was broken. And so he's like, we're not using that. But we started having sex again. And I told him like, okay, well, I do need the lube stuff because like it is pinchy and it hurts. And I don't know if it's I don't know what's happening hormonally, if it's a permanent thing. I have Mirena. So I don't have a menstrual cycle anyway, because Mirena sort of makes the bleeding slow down. So I don't know if I'm not menstruating because I'm like menopausal prematurely from all the treatment I've been through, or if it's just Mirena and everything's fine. But yeah, so we started just getting to know one another again and trying things and making more of an effort and going on more dates. And it's been a process. Like I started trying to masturbate again and like to have an orgasm, and it took a long time. It's taken months. Like in the beginning, I couldn't have an orgasm. And I don't know why. I don't know if it was like the fear or just biologically what had happened to me or my chemo or what. But it's gotten better over time. It's taken months. And sometimes we try and it's like, yep, not happening. Like the dog will come in and go, or just make a noise and like then forget it. The mood is gone. But sometimes like all the stars align and we can connect. And we're so proud of ourselves when we have sex and we both are able to like finish and connect with each other in that way. And yeah. So it's been a journey. It's been a journey about communication and healing and grieving and all those things.
And you are touching on something else that, you know, we're talking about sex, but I think it happens outside of sex too. And that is, you know, when you have family or close friends or other people, really don't do cancer in isolation. You know, you have other people's, you know, love and their energy, and you're caring for Sam and saying, oh, I've got this, I'm going to take care of your needs. And then you've got his response back. And, you know, that's a lot as well. I mean, it's a beautiful thing too. It took you in the direction that, you know, you all evolved into this, and you're still on this journey into a beautiful direction, it sounds like to me anyways. But yet that still is, it's still a lot, you know, as you're still sorting through things with your treatments and cancer and your career and your kids and your identity and all the change. And yet you're also managing and working with someone else too at the same time. So there is a lot, as we were talking about peeling those layers of the onion. And our own beliefs and thoughts about, you know, sex, for example, to bring it back to sex. I mean, a lot of people will not step a foot into a sex shop, you know. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure I'm at that place. I'm not sure I could. I hope I would.
Especially now after hearing your story.
I'm like, I want to talk to the lady.
But Tati was like, I'm going to teach my like stuffy ass doctor friend how to get her sex life back.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and what a blessing.
Bless really. Her for doing that.
And that's, again, when I was reading the research, that is one of the big things they suggest. You have to, and you used the word at the beginning when you were talking about your husband's, you know, all of his health issues. You guys had to reinvent
your sex life.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that is spoken about a lot, reinventing.
Yeah.
And that's goes back to the empowerment thing. I mean, cancer has, again, I'm generalizing this, not for everything or everyone, but in a generalized place, it does change things. Doesn't make it worse necessarily, but it could make it different and causes some reinventing.
I just hope this conversation helps people. We've been using the word empowerment just to feel empowered, to have the discussion with the doctor. Yes. And if their doctor doesn't know, maybe they can send them to somebody who does know. Because I think that one feeling that I had as a patient going through this is that wanting anything more than not dying, I felt like the medical establishment made me feel greedy for wanting anything more than not dying in my cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, what? You're one of the ones who gets to live and go into remission. You might even be cured. And now you want to have sex and you want to feel good and you want to be able to run faster. Like, I just, and maybe they didn't use those words exactly, but there's so many messages that get sent to us by even the absence of a discussion. Like, because we don't usually talk to people about their sex and their sexuality during cancer, like, because typically survivorship has traditionally focused on like post-treatment.
Yes.
And we're not really starting a discussion until like after treatment. I feel like that reinforces a message that it's not appropriate to think about it during treatment, or that it's, you're just getting a little bit too greedy. Like right now, the name of the game is you just survive this treatment, whatever it is for your chemo radiation surgery. And don't get greedy wanting more than that.
Yeah.
Wanting to like go out and have fun. And
yeah, this is our wheelhouse.
Drug it up.
We're going to cure this.
And yeah.
This is it. So yeah. And I does often seem to be the focus. I think what I just heard you say, and I just want to make sure if I got this correct, especially for our listeners, is it is important to bring up to your medical provider.
Yes.
And if you don't feel like, you know, while your oncologist, for example, or your oncology surgeon or your radiologist or whoever it might be, may be phenomenal at curing your cancer and a compassionate, wonderful healer, but you don't feel comfortable talking to them about this.
Yeah.
Find the right person to talk to. It could be a gynecologist, a urologist, a therapist, a sex therapist.
Yeah.
But there are people in the medical industry that you could feel comfortable talking to.
Absolutely. And everyone's issues are going to be different. Like one of my close friends who went through rectal cancer had radiation in the pelvic area, and she had to use vaginal dilators because there's actual scarring down the area. And she's also wants to continue, you know, having sex with her husband. And so there might be different issues for people depending on where their cancer was, where their treatment was, is. And so, yeah, it's, and not every oncologist is going to, or primary care doctor even for that matter, like you said, not every provider is going to be as awakened to this issue. And that's okay. You know, everyone has their wheelhouse.
Exactly.
But right. That's why as the patients, we need to sort of, if it's important to us, it's important enough to us, we need to be our own advocates and ask around.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, in kind of closing for this podcast, I, first of all, want to just acknowledge and thank you so much for just everything you have shared and being willing to not only your medical expertise, but your personal experiences as well. But do you have any closing thoughts or anything that you would like to share and nuggets for people listening to this podcast today?
Yeah. I mean, just like we touched on earlier, that sex is a complicated event of multiple body systems, and troubleshooting problems in the act of sex, you know, you've got to be able to like look through all those things to evaluate all those factors. Be patient with yourself. It's a process. Be kind and forgiving and open. Like if you can remain open, that maybe it's not today, and maybe don't feel like having sex today, but maybe healing can happen. And maybe it's, even though it's not happening today, it can happen in the future. Feel empowered to have discussions with your partner or partners that you're having intercourse with and your doctors about the emotional side of it, the practical aspects. Like, some people are going to, there are, you know, certain rules, prohibitions about, you know, sex with certain platelet counts, or when your white count is below a certain level, what type of sex you're having, vaginal, anal. Like, it's, there are some, like, just practical things safety wise that people should also feel empowered to talk to their doctors about, and just to be patient. And you're not greedy for wanting to stay in touch with this part of yourself or to find yourself in a new way when it comes to sex and sexuality. There were certain points in my journey where I apologize for people who hate the word journey, but
yeah, I know it's a tough one. I don't know how to call it either.
In my experience, in my cancer walk, like, I have multiple iterations, but there was a point where I just thought, you know, I might be able to stay alive. I might get cured. I might go into long-term remission, but I don't know if vitality and enjoying my life, I don't know if that's on the table for me anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm ever going to feel good again. And I felt that. And I really kind of believed that. And then I started, and then I met Tati, and I met other amazing survivors, thrivers. I came here. I became a joiner. I never thought I'd join, like, support groups and stuff, but I joined. So I will talk to anyone who will talk to me now about cancer and surviving cancer and cancer treatments, different conferences, multiple walks of life, different countries. I will have that conversation, and I'm starting to feel pretty vital again. And so I hope that we're ending this on a message of hope for people. And I'm not trying to be a Pollyanna about it, like, this shit's hard. I hope it can't see the SH works.
Absolutely. Because it is. And that's
hard.
True.
So I'm not trying to be, like, toxically positive.
Yeah. Here.
Like, it is extremely hard. It's okay to grieve, and it's okay to get really angry. And even with all that, just know that, like, vitality might still be on the table for you. Because it has been for me. And I was really at the pit of despair at certain points in this process. Yeah. And I'm starting to feel pretty good again. So I hope that gives people hope that's possible for them.
I am not going to say anything else. I'm just going to close this podcast because that was perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sam. I always enjoy our conversations. I'm looking forward to having many, many more. And I'm super excited for the project that you are working on with your medical organization. I hope to learn more about that. Maybe at some point we could share that with our listeners. So
yeah, that would be awesome. That work in progress.
Yes, work in progress. Yes, we'll keep that behind the curtain for now.
Yeah.
So just a reminder, this is Wellness Within Cancer Support Services podcast. And if you'd like to learn more about Wellness Within, you can access our website at wellnesswithin.org. We also have a YouTube station, which is Wellness Within Cancer Support Services. And with that, thank you for listening. And again, Dr. Sam, thank you for your time today and joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I still have a little bit of disbelief that I'm, like, alive and doing this. I feel like I'm living a dream, really.
Thank you, universe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good one, everybody.
Bye.